referee is reaching into their pocket.
What's it gonna be? Oh, it's a red card! Oh, that can mean only one thing. It's time for the Get Off My Pitch podcast. My name is Eric Paisley, and with me tonight is...
a one-day-only Notre Dame fan known as John Bennett.
Oh, that... zing. Zing. We'll talk a little bit about that on today's episode. John and I will be talking about the match against San Jose, a 0-0 draw. With the visiting San Jose Earthquakes, puts a damper on the Boys in Gold return to Geodis Park after the break. No one scored, and, well, that's pretty much it. So, podcast over. No, we'll talk a little bit more about that. We'll talk about our gut check, hardest working player, MVP. We are now going to have a new section called Uncomfortable Questions, where John and I ask each other an uncomfortable question related to Nashville soccer. Of course, we will tell you who or what needs to get off our pitch, and then we will give you a preview of next week's match against the Fighting Johnny Russells. Kansas City is coming to town. All right, John, nice to see you, my friend. How was your break?
It was good. It was a good weekend overall, you know, other than said game.
Yeah. What are we drinking tonight?
The Newton's Folly hard cider from Trader Joe's, you know.
Newton's classic. Folly. That still gives me a little giggle.
It does. It does. It makes me think of Newton in such a fond way.
I am drinking the milquetoast water of the draw. So just, you know, nothing. No celebratory here.
Yeah, I can feel
refreshing
that.
Refreshing and healthy, but still not quite a win. Not quite a win, right?
Yeah.
All right. What was your gut check? So before we get into the game itself, gut check, what was your feeling? I think we both felt in good heart going into this game, right? That we were going to get a result, and we were going to get a super positive result.
Yes, though that wavered when I saw the lineup come up. I don't know about you. We expected Godoy on international duties, Zimmerman on international duty. I think we had seen some tweets and talk about ahead of time that Gary had hinted that Leal was not ready to come back. So we kind of expected those things. But I was a little bit thrown for the loop by the Romney omission. Now, I heard it's because of health and safety protocols, so fine. Which, like multiple things, I think I'll probably say throughout this podcast, is the silver lining in all this, because I thought all of a sudden he had picked up a multi-week injury or something. So I'm good with health and safety protocol, because that usually means he can be back in a week. So silver lining than that. But it did make me waver a little bit, because I looked at that lineup and saw what projected to be a back three of Mayer, Miller, and Lovitz, which is what it turned out to be. And it didn't necessarily throw me for a loop and throw all the good hope out of the window. Oh, it's going to lose. We're going to be. But it did take some of the wind out of my sails, I guess, as a fan. I was a little worried.
I feel like that's when I saw the lineup, I was glad. First of all, I was glad to see Joe back in the lineup. So perhaps our prediction of he just needed a mental break from the game, you know, was true. And so we'll talk about that. So I was glad to see that. I kind of was hopeful. I was like, okay, Dax is back. Okay. Sean's there, right? We've got our wing backs with Lovitz and Mule as always, and Hawkinson up front. I actually thought, okay, this is a lineup we can do something with. San Jose is not a great team. They're not a great team. Found out today that they are the four-time recipient of the Wooden Spoon, and they also have been voted the worst franchise in MLS in history. Their owner is also the owner of the Oakland A's, and he has been voted the worst, one of the worst sports franchise owners. Davis, I think, is it? No, I can't think of his name, but I just knew that when he was when the Sounds were the AAA affiliate of the A's, there was a lot of moaning and complaining.
Well, aren't they the ones? Was it the A's or was it the Angels who had the attendance issues so far this year? They talked
it's
about
both.
More raccoons
The Athletics have always had attendance problems because their stadium is garbage. But I digress. We're getting off topic.
We digress. Yes, we're tangenting.
Getting off topic. The San Jose Earthquakes are not a good franchise, and they are not a good team this year. And so I still, even with the lineup I saw when I texted you, I thought, okay, all right, we'll see what happens. Let's see what, Hawkinson's in good form, right? I mean, I feel like CJ, you got CJ and Honey. I mean, we could do something with this. Let's see what happens. That was my feeling going into it. Just gut feeling. Result of the game though, gut reaction on the 0-0 draw?
It felt bad. It felt real bad. We looked bright in the beginning, and honestly, like, it started out, at least to me, a lot like the last San Jose game, where we got fat, we got breaks and we got counters and we pushed them and they couldn't stop it. They, you know, they were porous. But it seemed like we kind of slowed down as the game went on. And they also were a lot more progressive. That is the one thing, the only thing that I will give credit to the same Renta announcer duo from the last time we had a TUDN Twitter broadcast. The only thing they said that I agreed with is they thought it was interesting because they said, quote unquote, San Jose plays with a helter skelter play style normally. Whatever. Take that as you will. But they said that they both thought it was interesting how much they were building up and slowly progressing the ball and, you know, had a more progressive play. And I agree. They definitely seemed to slow down in possession more, and it was less of Cade Cowell just bombing down wings. Now, he did do that. They had some of that, but there was a lot more, like, Montero was much more involved in trying to circulate the ball. So they played a little bit differently. And I don't know. I saw all that, and that was interesting. But it still seemed like, again, all of our good chances came off breaks. And we just, you know, offsides on one. You know, another one was within inches. Hawkinson with, I don't know if he just couldn't get any lift on that little ball to get over. Was it Maria who was defending? But, yeah, there were some near misses. We had the better chances, but it was kind of a disappointing effort. There were a lot of things that I saw that seemed just disjointed or off in this game, you know?
I was curious to see your take since you watched it. You watched it streamed. I watched it live. I was at the game. And at the game, it was a hard game to watch. It was very, it was just bad soccer. It just looked poor. Mm-hmm. And a couple of comments I heard, even not from me, but from just around, it's like playing down to opponent. This has become a bad habit now where we're playing down to an opponent.
Yes.
As you rightly tweeted or texted me, we should have put this to bed early. And just because we got a bad call, we should have just put it right back down the throat. You know, come right back at them, right in the face. I don't feel like they were moping or anything, but man, it just seemed like that bad call took a little bit of the momentum away from us. And I just had so many other things going on this weekend that I didn't really get a chance to sit and see Gary's post game. I do want to watch it tomorrow. I would be interested to see what he said. I feel like we came out bright. We got the bad call against us, and then we just kind of went, we seem to fall back into more of a defensive mindset. That was my gut reaction to the game. And after that, the soccer match became just difficult to watch because it was such poor play. People like Joe kicking the ball out of bounds, their goalie kicking the ball again, throwing the ball out of bounds, like missing passes and it going back to the touchline, back on against the back line. It was like laughably bad. And I don't know if we were feeding off each other's poor energy, but after the 70th minute, I kind of wanted to get up and leave. I'm like, I don't believe I need to be sticking around for this. This is not what I really came for.
Yeah, it definitely near the end. There didn't seem to be or feel, or I couldn't see the real urgency of everyone forward. Go bomb down the field. Let's get it on this one. Let's get it in. It did seem like 70th, 80th minute, both teams kind of relented to just playing out the tie and going out with a whimper. Like it really didn't seem like we ratcheted it up and tried to go for it. I mean, yes, we had some opportunities that they had. We both had shots in those last 20 minutes, but it didn't seem like anything was really threatening. And it didn't seem like we got that. Gary says, go everyone forward, you know, have Joe play at the half line. Let's go get this. But there was none of that. Just kind of like, we're done.
I thought when Brian came on, Brennan Unga, when he came on, he would bring that, you know, pedal to the floor energy. And he did, but he kept passing the ball back to Eric Miller, who kept passing it back to, it was just like, we were, all of us on my side of the field were getting audibly frustrated with how many chances we were just like, okay, well, nope, just pass it back. There's nothing there. So we're done. It was weird because Eric in the first half of the game was really pressing high. He was really supporting. He seemed like he was really supporting. the motion mm-hmm. forward. And then like,
yeah, minute, yeah. He wasn't even always on the side. He cut into the middle a little bit and he was moving
minute
around.
60 hit. And he was like, oh, all right, well, game's over. All right. I'm just going to pass it back to Joe. Oh, a guy got the yeah. ball up. Oh, I'm going to pass it back to Joe. Oh, I got the ball. Well, I'm just going to pass it back to.
Yeah.
It was,
it did seem like we were out of ideas and just got stale. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That it was, mm-hmm. we were all very, very frustrated. The fans and my side, we became increasingly frustrated as the game wore on.
Yeah. And I think that's a key thing. The gut check for this is frustration. It wasn't anger. It wasn't like we got screwed. It was a bad call. We missed a thing. It was just, there was just such a lack of anything to it, you know, that almost kind of makes it harder.
Yeah, and you can't blame the weather or anything else because it was a beautiful night. It was gorgeous. Saturday
yes, it
night.
Was.
It was a perfect night for soccer. The pitch, though, and as you said, the pitch, it was terrible. I was a bit
the transition to summer grass is not going as smoothly as we'd hoped, I think.
I was embarrassed. It looked really bad, and you said it looked bad on TV, right?
Yeah, there were some brown patches and it looked like there were some clumps. And I know I've read they're transitioning the grass. There's a plan. And, you know, maybe in another week it looks pristine again. But it's just so funny coming from, like, you and I, we admired the pitch when we first saw it on that preview day. And, like, it looked great. And this is also – and I get there are people who know a lot more. I hate mowing my lawn. I suck at that. I don't know crap about plants. I'm not inclined in that in any way. But – I'm sure they're doing the right things, but it's just one of those like, well, it didn't quite look like it, but you know.
Yeah. Also getting to the park.
Yeah. I heard there was some snafus with traffic and everything with CMA Fest.
It was bad. Although I kind of had mentally prepared myself because I knew there was so much going on downtown. Mm-hmm. There's just not enough officers. There literally just wasn't enough officers to get out there and direct traffic. Like they had two guys at the corner where we pull in, and those guys were working their tails off, but it was just, you know, Anyway, so 0-0 draw, the whole night felt kind of off. We're going to take a quick break. We're just going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the hardest working player, the MVP. So stay with us. And we are back. Just a quick reminder before we jump into this next section that you can catch us on the live stream. John and I live stream this recording every Sunday night / Monday / whenever we can. So check us out. Make sure if you do subscribe to us on YouTube, we do live stream on YouTube. It's fun because we leave all the cursing in. And also check us out on Twitter. What's the Twitter handle there, John?
@GOMP_pod.
Awesome. All right. Hardest working player. I'll kick us off. It was clear to me, and I Twittered at you or texted you a couple times. Sean Davis was working his tail off. San Jose, say what you know. I did make fun of them. They have a very strong midfield. They also have a player Thompson, I believe, Man Bun.
Yes.
Who?
Not Tommy Thompson, right?
No, no. He is he's a good player on a bad team. Like he is very talented, and they also have a right back, right center back, real tall guy. I can't think of his name. You may want to pull up the roster, but
am I Nathan?
Yeah. Both of them really, really put it to us. They were they were good in possession. They stopped two clear point blank shots. I mean, they brought their A game defensively to the pitch. And, so, you know, hats off to them for that. So, but Sean had his hands full. What about you? Who is the hardest working player in your book?
So I know he was voted as the Twitter man of the match and all that. I'm going to give it to Joe because so again, I mentioned this theme of silver linings. Both my picks for the next two things are the silver linings in this. Joe's back. Joe looked fine. Mm-hmm. Like you said, yeah, there was a long pass that went out. Honestly, the only thing I felt I could really fault him for is that one save. I think it was on a Bobisi shot that kind of hit him as he was falling in. I don't pop straight up and came back to him. I mean, there is a 1 in a million chance someone could have maybe been there to vulture that, but like it wasn't going to happen. You know what I mean? It was his under control. But that was the only thing he let up. in position. He got all the shots. He secured everything. He did not do a lot of close range passing, which I think is fine because they were pressing us. So we did long outlets, which occasionally do go out. So, you know, I forgive him on that one. But Joe definitely seemed like he was back. Like the break did him good, whatever it was. So to me, I do think he was hardworking. He didn't have a lot to do in the first half, but the second half, he definitely had to. There were some crackers mm-hmm. of shots out there. Firecracker, whatever. There were some good shots. And there was one that was deflected. I know that, you know, popped up and kind of went a little bit of an unexpected direction. So I was impressed by it. It seemed like he was back to being his sharp self, what we've seen the last couple years. But he was, again, he was doing work. And like you said, unfortunately, he was involved in far too many plays with the back passes, which is, you know, kind of a testament to how it was going. So I'm actually going to give it to Joe because I think you could have made the argument he was the MVP because he saved some of those key shots. But I think he did a great job out there and kind of deserved that honor because he was working.
Yeah, I think I'll back your play there. I actually have Joe as my MVP because I feel like this was a little bit of a comeback story for me. He definitely seemed a lot more refreshed. He was a little in the warm up. I watched him in the warm up. He looked a lot more intense. A lot more just more Joe Willis ish. He's a very very stoic guy, and he seemed to be a little more passionate, a little more energetic out there. So maybe he just needed a break. Like he's just a human and just needed a break. And, you know, hats off to that. So that's why he got my MVP because he kept a sort of Midland effort offensively from turning into our first home loss. So unfortunately, that's why he gets an MVP in my book.
That makes sense. For a correction, cracking shots. That's the phrase they use over the pond. Just butchered the hell out of that.
Shot.
So,
it's a crack.
I apologize.
A cracker shot.
So my MVP, in a defensive battle, I'm going to give it to Jack because we've talked about his development as play, but in this game, he was called to be the anchor center back. We've seen him go from, you know, sent to USL to get playing time to becoming a fringe starter to a regular starter. This was full fledged. This was on Jack. Like, as much as both Miller and Lovitz are more experienced players, you know, they're asked to do more offensive stuff. He's the guy that had to stay home. He had to watch for a Bobasi. He had to watch all those plays. Like, he's developed up until now, but to me, I give it to him because he was, I mean, the man's 20 years old and we've now asked him to be the guy. He had to be the man for this game in our defensive. He had to be the anchor, and he showed up. He did a great job. Now, admittedly, when it came to, there were virtually no set pieces from San Jose, so that we didn't see a lot of, you know, set piece defense and, you know, aerial battles of that effect, but he still, you know, did well in all aspects. So I just got to give it to him because I think it was very impressive at that age to just, you know, finally be called up, and he delivered.
Yeah, I'll back you up on that one, adding this, that it didn't dawn on me that Jack was our center back until about halfway through the game. And I was like, oh, Jack's been back there the whole time because that we kept passing it back to him. I'm like, why are we, you know what I mean? So whenever I don't even think about the center back, which means that's a good thing because I'm not thinking about the center back. You know, I'm not thinking about, you know, them passing it back. And I'm like, then I realized, man, what must be going through Jack Mayer's mind having to fill the role of Zimmerman?
Right.
I don't know what you...
And not only doing that, but doing it without Romney there, because usually Romney would shift over, or you'd have him there. He had Miller and Lovitz.
Now, Dad was on the field, so you did have a presence there, a veteran presence.
Yes, he had a good safety blanket in front of him.
So you had a coach on the field. Although, I got to say, Dax did not have one of his better games last night.
No.
But to San Jose's credit, like I said, their midfield and their center right and right back are very good, and they really they really gave our midfield quite a workout. And I feel like, again, Dax is just not, he's not in his 20s anymore, so I'm just going to leave that comment as it is. But Jack Mayer, I could see that. I did want to plug before we move on to our next section. Speaking of dads, I have started getting comments on my dad. So I've got dad number one as my jersey. I'm still not. People are starting to come up to me and ask me about my jersey, which I didn't. Honestly, no, seriously, I did not expect that.
Right.
So I'm sitting in the pregame warm up, and another, I guess, a dad comes up to me and goes, "Hey, I just want to introduce myself. So who are you the number one dad of?" I'm like, "Oh, actually, it's a nickname I got."
Oh, did they think you were like a player dad?
Yeah, I think that's it. And I didn't even realize that. Maybe that's what they think I am. I didn't even think about that. I said, "No, actually, that's my nickname from the roadies, because I was always dadding everyone up. So Steven Robinson, the guy that does all the chanting and all that crap, he gave me the nickname Dad because I was always like, 'Steven, don't stand on that. Steven, don't have five beers in a row. Steven, don't mix that alcohol. Steven, you have to get up and work in the morning.' You know, I'm always dadding him up." So that's why, and he enjoyed that story. So I go get a taco. And the lady at the taco stand asked me, "Oh, are you dad? Are you the dad guy?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like,
"The dad." Oh no.
So now I've earned a reputation in the section, and I realized that I do get very vocal during the game. I am a very passionate fan, especially when neither my wife or child are there. I kind of get a little bit, you know, free with my language.
You're not reining it in.
So maybe I need to rein. You're right. Maybe I need to rein it in a little bit. But I got three comments on my dad jersey. I don't know. I have to watch what I do from now on. So speaking of uncomfortable question time. So this is a new section where John and I will ask each other an uncomfortable question about Nashville soccer. So I'm going to
I like the, by the way, I like the way you introduced this. You did include the about Nashville soccer.
Yeah.
Cause we're not getting off the rails.
No. This is not that podcast. This is a Nashville soccer podcast. We can start another podcast about uncomfortable question, but this is about Nashville soccer. So I'll kick it off. So here's the thing. Here's how we will frame this. I'm going to just ask John an uncomfortable question about Nashville soccer and just get his reaction. So John and I are both graduates of Vanderbilt University. And so we have a certain dislike for a certain team that is located east of us. That team's fans, during a loss, during a big tournament this last weekend, threw things on the field in a fit of being upset with a certain call. The same behavior was also exhibited in the supporter section. It didn't show up on television, but it was actually people were throwing things on the field from the supporter section. And I immediately thought that this is not something I want to see from, especially my own. I can imagine at UT, I'm sure there are a lot of fans who didn't want to see that. I mean, not everyone's that white trashy. And of course, I know that in the supporter section, that's something they don't want to see. I know that Steven would lose his mind, and he probably will when he finds out what happens. So my uncomfortable question for John is, have you ever been tempted to throw something on the field being upset at a game? Any game that you've ever been to? Especially at a Nashville soccer game.
Not a Nashville soccer game. I have been tempted. And I think I may also have unintentionally led a referee to believe that I did at a Vanderbilt basketball game. There was a heated game and we were, you know, the student section was angry. Someone did throw a bottle and the ref turned over there and I stood up and shouted something at him. I was not the one who threw the bottle, but I don't know. I said something not completely offensive because I know you don't swear at the refs. Right. You're going to get your shit. But I was like, yeah, he was playing, you know, horrible call or something. And he looked at me and I saw him stare at me for a good second. I was like, yeah. Oh, wait, he probably thinks I'm the jerk who I need to sit back down now. So I like, because, you know, this student section usually stands. I sat down. I sat to hide behind the people around me because I was like, I don't want to actually get kicked out of this thing. This is not the right move right
probably now. Probably a good move.
So I did not throw something, but I may have at least led a referee to believe I did. I get it. Usually, I don't know. I get the frustration in the way of expressing it, but just you just don't do it. Especially,
I've been tempted.
Some arenas
when we got that call in the U.S. Open game,
Yeah, but the other thing is like the soccer pitch. You don't want to throw it out there because you never know what's going to happen. No. I don't know. It's just No, you don't do it, but I can't say that I haven't thought of it, but I have never gone past the point of restraint of actually doing it.
Yeah, the only thing I've hurled at referees is words, never objects. And
many words.
You know,
with gestures too.
Maybe. I'm not gonna confirm or deny that I have given certain hand gestures to certain referees in the USL level.
I mean, it was just the Italian. It was just pinched fingers, Eric. It was fine.
So, so we were talking about this subject in the car ride today. We just went to a Sounds game, came home, and we were talking about referees and, you know, bad calls. Another thing that has happened recently, I learned from the SiriusXM show. I've been listening to more of the soccer radio host there with Tony Miola. I think it's Counterattack. Yeah, that's the show. Mm-hmm. And there's been a crisis of refereeing in America, especially in the East Coast. Parents have become so toxic at the youth mm-hmm. level yes. that they've canceled entire games. Entire seasons have mm-hmm. been just shut down because they can't find referees, because all the referees are young. They're learning too. I mean, they're young. And so, you know, apparently they think that's like Old Trafford out there and their kids like, you know, Mo Salah, and like it's the championship or something. Like it's Loudoun, Kit, guys. It's Loudoun County, Virginia. Okay, it's not Old Trafford.
I'm varring this for now. You know, Mo Salah plays for Liverpool, yeah, so that whatever. Would be the visiting team if it was at Old Trafford, Man United's home.
You okay. get my point though. Just, but var
okay.
it.
I'm just
please var it.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to var it. You technically could be correct if Liverpool was playing at United. Yeah,
but you get what I'm saying. This is not the Champions League. Yeah. This is Loudoun County,
and
Virginia.
A certain well-known sport person who is at least a supporter of same said school we spoke about before, and I think is from Tennessee, one Clay Travis, recently went on Twitter and bragged about how he got into a fight and got kicked out by an umpire because he was calling out their stuff, even though he usually doesn't do those things.
Oh,
so, I mean,
yeah.
You know, you've got – I wouldn't call him a celebrity because I don't want to give him any credit for what he does. But, you know, you've got people out there who have followings doing the same thing and setting the example. So
Clay Travis also is a Vanderbilt graduate as well. He's both UT and Vanderbilt.
That's unfortunate. Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll get off topic. We'll get off that topic. So, John, what's your uncomfortable question for me?
So you mentioned, and this is specifically focused on, well, coming from this game, you mentioned, you know, Dax being a little older and slower, you know, with San Jose, they pressed us a lot. However, they still did a lot of work down the sides. Cade Cowell, awesome. And what is it Espinoza? Mm-hmm. Is that their? Yeah, that was their other winger.
And
they were both
and
blazing
French
down the
guy,
side.
And the French guy too.
They were both doing a lot of that. But this press thing, it seemed like we had issues with this. Is it? We've talked about it before. Is it a bigger problem that we can't handle presses like this? Do we, like you mentioned, you as well as I'd hoped Anungwa might bring in some fresh legs and some stuff, but we still seem to have some possession issues there. Is it an issue with the press? Is it an issue with our creativity? Do you feel like this is a problem? What are your thoughts?
It is a problem, and it's because we are easily dispossessed. It seems like our midfield passing, this is my observation from watching it live, and I'm glad you brought this up. It seems like if we're facing a good midfield who is pressing us, we give up the ball way too easily. And not only that, we're giving up the ball, not midfield, but closer to our own defensive zone. And that is setting the team, them up for an aggressive posture, because then they get in their mind, oh, if we can just get Nashville past midfield, dispossess them, we can get a shot on. Both, I think, I have to check the stats, but I think both of the somewhat hopeful long-range shots were both from where they dispossessed us from the ball, past midfield, took a few touches, and just let it rip. And I feel like that's the that's way they've been coached. And why wouldn't you? Especially if you've got no Walker Zimmerman back there, no Romney, I'd take a rip at it too, right? I mean, I'd take a shot. I mean, our midfield players are still trying to scramble around. Sometimes it seemed like Muil, Davis, and, you know, and company, random, you know, maybe Dax, you know, maybe Eric Miller, were just all just like in each other's way. So yes, I think the press works against us because of those things. Not that the press works, but I think it works against us. And I think that this has become evident to other teams. Even teams like San Jose are picking it up. So yes, my answer to your uncomfortable question is yes. I feel like the press is working against
us. And here is why I bring it up. I'm looking at the MLS soccer.com stats, and I don't actually see one for interceptions. But I feel like I can recall from the first watch through, I haven't rewatched it, at least four occasions where Montero himself, no one else, Montero, picked someone's pocket on our team. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We had our back turned to him. He came up and picked the pocket or was directly there to interception or dispossess someone. I feel like he did it at least four times. There were probably other cases. Now, granted, they had a couple things. Their Remedy guy, he had a couple cases where he passed the ball to us. He, like, it was some bad passes. Yep. And they mocked that a little bit on the broadcast. But I do feel like I saw instances where we got our pockets picked. We weren't quite bright enough. You know, like we – or there was a kind of a 50-50 chance and they outrun or you know, got it from us. I just saw some things that I was like, man – this isn't a good look. And like you said, it leads to not always quality chances, but chances that are easier. Cause when you get the ball at the halfway mark, instead of getting it from a goal kick reset or something else, and you have possession, it's going to be a lot easier to keep, you know, push forward and only cover those 40 yards to get a 10 yard shot at goal. So I bring that up because I saw some particular things that looked like their press was working, even if they didn't necessarily intercept passes, but on some individual basis, they were able to get the ball from us and generate that. And I feel like going back, and I'd like for you to confirm this, I feel like that was the exact opposite of the game we just played. We intercepted, we were all over, we got possession, we jumped early and we got up to a 3-0 lead because we were doing that. We were pressuring, getting the ball back, and we were just pushing. Yep. I don't think San Jose was quite that intense. Obviously, they didn't score three goals against us, but it did feel like our possession either ended one of two ways to me, which was some sort of, you know, break down there to get an open shot, or some kind of passing thing came back, cycled around for a while, and then we ended up dispossessed with nothing out of it. You know what I mean? It felt like there was a lot of possession that ended with losing the ball to them.
And I feel like that's because I think Hockenson did not have his best game. Sean Davis had some two key giveaways I can think of. Just recall, I can close my eyes and recall. And Taylor Washington did not have a good game. He just didn't. He wasn't bad, but he was just out of sync. And I think that someone like Taylor needs time on the pitch consistently to get going. I don't think you can really throw him out there randomly on a Saturday night and just have him perform X moves. He seems to me like a consistency type player that you need to give him, and he grows into the game, right? He'll grow into the games as he plays more and more. I think I saw that from him when he was consistently playing. So
and I will say this, at least as I can recall, this was the first time in the past like four or five games that Sean and Dak started together. It's been Sean and Anungwa, you know, Sean and Brian for a couple games, and there was one where Godoy started up front. So I'm just saying, I don't know if maybe there's a little bit of funkiness in the way that partnership plays together. Because we talked about, again, last game against Colorado, Anungwa and Davis were great pressing together. They got the ball back. They led to a lot of those chances. I don't know if there's a little bit of that, and I can kind of understand maybe if Jack is in the back, why, you know, Dax would be there. But it was, I don't know. I don't think there was anything necessarily wrong with the lineup. I don't think there was, you know, you can point fingers, say like, we absolutely didn't win because of this, but it did just seem like it was a lot sloppier. The possession wasn't there. Credit to San Jose for their pressing to earn that. You know, they could have played back and played a different style, but you know, it's just a little worrisome to see that again. And it makes me wonder if other teams will start doing that and we're going to, you know, struggle more.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will continue this conversation after we take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about who or what needs to get off our pitch. And then we'll finally talk about my favorite non-NSC player coming to Nashville, Mr. Johnny Russell. So stay with us. And we are back. John, we're going to talk about who or what needs to get off our pitch. John, would you like to kick us off tonight? Who or what needs to get off our pitch?
You know, it's interesting. I did not attend this game. But I do feel – I heard many stories, a little bit from you, a little bit from other people about from people who attend regularly, you know, supporters and stuff, there was a general sense of some disinterested or very casual fans who were there and weren't necessarily paying attention to the game. We're talking over it. We're doing some of this. Look, we want to grow this thing, obviously. the supporters are only so big, the back line, the whole collective, you know what I mean? We're only so many people. We can't populate 30,000 seats. We need all these, you know, we need casual fans. We want people to come in. Like when I come with my family, you know, so I think we're going to probably go to sometime in July, bring all them. Like, yes, my kids are not going to pay the most attention, but that is what the family section is for, to be fair. I'm going to keep them up there. But it just seemed like I heard from multiple different sources on Twitter, Discord, different things about just in general, there was a lot of fans who were not necessarily in it. I think some of it, just a little bit, I will excuse a little bit of it, was because of this game. This just was a boring game.
It was not a great product on the field.
It was tough to watch. So I guess my thing is, I don't know what exactly to get off my pitch, but I guess I would like to, if you're going to go to a soccer game, pay attention to the game. Try to be invested. Try to watch. Try not to be a jerk to the people around you. So let's put it this way. The get off my pitch is being a menace to those around you. You know what I mean? If you're going to go, if you're the guy loud talking, there's no one around. It's like being in the movie theater. You know, if you're talking, everyone knows who the guy is talking in the theater. You know what I mean? You can hear him and you know he probably knows it and he's still trying to get away with it. But you know, if you're going to go to the game, you may not know it. You may be casual. Go and enjoy. Take it in. But, you know, be respectful to those around you. You know, if everyone's, you know, sitting down, do it. Don't be the guy standing. Like you talked about, there was those guys, those kids that kind of stood the whole time in front of you when no one in your section was sitting that one time. You know, just general respectfulness. I don't know. It's just, I heard a lot of murmurs of that and it's fresh. I also heard some very poor things that happened as well. We won't talk about those in the podcast, but you know, hopefully just, you know, general sense of respect. And if you can't do it, just, you don't need to be there, you know?
Yeah. There was a gentleman.
Sorry if that's a little gatekeepy.
No,
you
know, there was a gentleman next to me, as I mentioned, who he was either drunk, high, or both. Though I took the opportunity, I'm not grandstanding here, but I took the opportunity to try to take my own advice and took some time to talk to him, to teach him the game. He had no idea what was going on. And I think for multiple reasons, but let's just assume that it was because this was either one of his first games or he just didn't know what was going on. The person that had brought him seemed disinterested in interacting with him, probably because, again, aforementioned drunk or highness. I took the opportunity to say, hey, he's like, he was complaining because he didn't know any of the songs. He didn't know any of to sing. I'm like, hey, don't worry about it. Just clap along. And that's usually good enough. He's like, oh, okay. And then when the offside thing happened, I got very upset. He got upset with me. He's like, then he asked me, what is offsides?
So, hey, you know what? He went along though. That was good.
He did.
Good.
He got really upset with me, and I appreciated him getting upset with me. Then I realized he had no idea what offsides is. And then I said, the truth is I don't either, but I know enough to be angry. So he got a kick out of that. So yeah, I feel like there's an opportunity there to engage fans more maybe, but I'll back your play on that. I think there's also some, if you're going to go, you know, go with the intent of enjoy it. But last night's game was tough.
It did also seem like you said with the CMA Fest and the traffic, and I think it felt like it was just kind of a general not the best atmosphere in and around the park for this game.
It wasn't.
You know what I mean?
It wasn't.
I think there was a lot of factors to that, but
it wasn't.
Anyway.
All right.
Back to you, Eric.
Mine's tough. Mine's going to be really easy. My get off the pitch is for, again, this is my second red card for Nashville Weather, but I'm going to combine it. This is a dual red card for Nashville Weather with 5 p.m. scheduling on a Saturday. So I get to my section at 6 o'clock on Saturday. The sun is right in my face. Now, that's not a problem because it wasn't that bad. It was beautiful out Saturday. So I just, sunglasses, I had my bucket hat, no problem. I will absolutely die next Saturday because it's going to be 99 degrees on Saturday, next Saturday. 99. With a humidity in the 60s, 68, 70. Oof. I mean, it is going to be South America level hot. And that game is at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I got to tell you, John, I'm thinking about selling my tickets. That is not something I can't, I'm too old for that. I can't do it. I knew this day would come when I selected those tickets on the TV side. I was thinking more like playoff Eric. You know, I was thinking more like, you know, late October Eric and the playoffs, not so much mid-July Eric, like sitting there in the mid-afternoon heat. So
yeah.
So my two red cards go to the scheduling of 5 p.m. games and Nashville's weather. So dual red card. That's the second. That's a two-time get off my pitch for Nashville weather. So I know it's not.
You're just making up all kinds of rules.
It's not a
competition. Stretching and bending as we go.
It's not a competition, but it is now. All right.
Yeah.
All right, John.
Also, by the way, okay. So you don't like the 5 p.m. kickoff time, mm-mm. but we hate really late games mm-hmm. from the West because we're in the Western Conference, but we still hate those, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to know where the line is, where we stand.
It's wherever I say it is. Okay. So, let's bring this podcast home. John, let's talk about what we, wait a minute. Who are we playing next?
What?
Who are we, who's coming to town?
It's Sporting Kansas City. I mean, I've heard of them. They have some famous players.
I don't know about the. I don't know about the team, but I know Johnny Russell's coming.
Yeah,
to
there's
town.
One guy. Yeah, who's that guy you like?
He's from Glasgow. Yeah. Oh, it's Glasgow's own Johnny Russell. Can't wait to see him. I can't wait.
You're gonna rush the pitch, try and get on.
And I know that he's gonna play on my side at some point. Oh, I'm gonna give him an earful. Oh, it's gonna be good. Oh, it's gonna be good. I've been looking up.
If I see him in. What way? So we
because he's already we've seen him in video come over the fence and go after a fan. So
his own supporters.
Oh my gosh! Really?
Let alone fans.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they were their own supporters. I can't imagine how he'll go after someone like you. All I know is when I see him, it just that you know walking on the pitch, the instant turn towards that section.
Here we go. Oh, it's on! It's on!
Pray for Eric.
Yeah. So for the folks at home, Johnny Russell is a former Scottish Premier League player. With Blackburn Rovers, I believe he played with Blackburn. And
I'm not sure.
Came to America. I love all Scottish players. Johnny Russell is probably the most well-known Scottish MLS player. Probably, I can't think of another. But yeah. Anyway, hope to at least say hello to him at some point during the match. All right. That's a 5 p.m. kickoff. Like I said already, with Kansas City. Thoughts on the game? I feel like we need a redemption game here, and I'm gonna go ahead and give the score line as 2-0.
Okay. Well, so you remember I talked about my wish was 10 points in the 4 games. Yeah. We've already had the tie, so that means we'd have to win the next 3 mm-hmm. to fulfill my wish.
Yeah, I don't have a math degree, but yes.
We can still do it. Kansas City is beatable. We did it before in Kansas City, remind you. Mm-hmm. DC is beatable, so is Portland. So Portland. Though Portland is a very good possession team, so it's going to be one of those where it's going to take us a long time to break them down unless we get a fast break anyway. But that's a preview of 2 shows from now. I think we can beat them. We did it before. I felt like we were a little bit lucky in that game the way it went down, the 2-1 win. I think at home we can do better. They have not improved and perhaps gotten worse in the interim. Yeah. In fact, they just had a player get a red card and kicked out of the game today. And Johnny Russell did score, but they still lost 2-1 to New England. So I got to think we win this. We need to win this. Again, regardless of star players, who they are, what they actually bring to the game day when we play them, if they are in the bottom part of the standings, we need to beat these teams. It's just how it works. Right now, we're playing like a team that doesn't want to have a home game. We're okay with playing a road game in the first round of the playoffs. That's what we're doing by this stuff. We got to batten down the hatches, button up shit, whatever. Use all the analogies you want to do. We got to pull it together and do it. We got to go in. We have to win this game. It needs to be definitive. Not like Colorado where we go up 3 and we just coast. I mean, it doesn't have to be that blow them out definitive, but we just need to make sure this is a win without question, not threatening. You know what I mean? We want to make it look good. So I think 2-0 sounds like a fair score line. I think they're a decent team. I think they will threaten. They could have chances.
Yeah, but I don't see them scoring.
I'm going to predict that Romney's back, so I feel a little bit better about our back line, even though Zimmerman will be done with international duty.
I don't think
he's actually going to play because his game's on Wednesday. Yeah. He will not play, whether his back or not. I think 2-0 sounds good. I will agree to that because I think we can keep them off the score sheet, and I think we can put up a couple. I think Hani will do something spectacular, beautiful, whether it be an assist or, you know, one of those, you know, he's got a foot to make the goal and he slots it down that little tunnel and gets it in there. I think we win. But again, I think we win. We need to win it as well.
All right, let's bring this home before we get any more ranty than we already are. So what did we get wrong from last week?
I don't have a lot. I don't think I have much. It was our international one, so we kind of took an international VAR break. No, I don't think I have anything particular. Clean bill of
I
health.
think I
I don't know.
mispronounced Uruguay.
Oh, we mispronunciated some names. Oh, don't get me wrong. Because we had that discussion about Uruguay.
Uruguay.
And
Uruguay.
we decided not to talk about
Okay.
that. We weren't going to grade ourselves on pronunciation for that
Fair
episode.
enough.
So.
All right, John, just another plug. Remember, folks, you can see us live on the YouTube. We broadcast this. We're trying to do a little more schedule, but we usually broadcast on Sunday night. So if you're subscribed, check us out. Also, John, give us the Twitter details.
Yep. At GOMP underscore pod, at GOMP underscore pod. We will post episodes, and I will promise that I'm actually going to make an effort to post some other regular things, you know, whether it be taunting, whether it be interesting, whether it be just some memes about soccer, because, you know, I'll need some humor every now and then.
Yep, and even if it's just trolling Steven Robinson, that is, you know, if that's all we've done, I'm good with that. And on that note, John, if we don't melt,
Give the poor guy a break. He's a great guy. We love him. Just shout, and he is a responsible adult, despite how Eric made him seem earlier.
yeah. Well, it's 50,
Usually.
we'll talk more about that maybe on future podcasts, but we're 50-50 on that. All right, John, as long as we don't melt, I will see you next week, my friend. So I'll see you later, bud.
Sounds good, man. Have a great one.